Wasn't that her argument in the first case?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This is, as the Court knows, this case has been around a long time, and it's been a long and circuitous route that got us here, which is now our fourth appellate court that this case has been in. Time prevents me from going through all the details of the procedures that have preceded this action here, but I think it's important to highlight some of the important aspects of the case to bring the issues to light. So 9 years ago, next month, Nicole Kesterson was involved in a motor vehicle accident in which she was a passenger in a vehicle driven by her supervisor, who claims that he was tapped in the rear on Highway 70, carrying his vehicle across the center line of the highway and into the path of a tractor trailer. As a result of that, she was injured. She and her husband initiated a lawsuit where she filed an action against Gary Wallop, the driver of her vehicle, against her uninsured motorist carrier, State Farm, for what we'll call Wallop's conduct, and another claim in State Farm, another count, for the actions of the vehicle that Wallop said tapped him in the rear of a phantom vehicle, which, after we got through all the procedures of motions to dismiss and summary judgment, got us up to what is called Kesterson 1 from the Western District. And what we learn in Kesterson 1 is that the Court of Appeals in the Western District said, well, your action against Gary Wallop doesn't exist. It never has. He's immune under the workers' compensation statutes, and therefore you don't have a cause of action. We're going to sustain a motion for summary judgment filed by State Farm with respect to him. Of course, the key in the case is that appeal, the Western District declined to entertain our motion, our request for them to appeal, to review the decision on also letting out State Farm on the Wallop conduct. So we dismissed, the case went back to trial court. We dismissed the UM claim pertaining to the phantom vehicle. We ended up back in the Western District on now what's called Kesterson 2. And in Kesterson 2, we find out that, like Kesterson 1, the court rules that we don't have a cause of action against State Farm on the Wallop conduct under the UM policy. So we are again, the judgment of the trial court is affirmed, and we're again sent back to the trial court. All right. At that point, there was no case. On both those cases, we requested transfer to this court, and we were declined. So that gets us to what I'm going to call Kesterson 3, and this puts everything back into perspective. We refiled the case against the phantom vehicle, and we refiled the case having been told up till now by the Western District that we never had a cause of action against Gary Wallop, and we never had a cause of action against State Farm. And obviously, we were never able to present evidence about Gary Wallop's negligence or the application of the insurance policy to negligence on Gary Wallop in the underlying UM case. There was just no cause of action. We had no evidence. There was no judgment for or against either party on the merits of the case. And I think that's what's key to this appeal.
But wasn't that your choice not to proceed on the merits against the phantom driver claim and to instead dismiss it? And why doesn't that violate our rule against multiplicity of actions and splitting your cause of action?
Well, certainly it was our voluntary decision to do it. And there's a couple of reasons for it. The most important reason is we didn't want to get into a situation where we're trying the case at least twice and maybe more, because had we not dismissed it, we're now trying the case in the trial court with this issue of Wallop's UM status undecided. We try it against the phantom vehicle, and no matter what happens, whether we win or lose, the case is going to get appealed on the Wallop status. If we win on the Wallop status on appeal, we're going right back to the trial court. Now we're trying a case in the trial court against State Farm on Wallop's conduct, but the conduct of the phantom vehicle has been tried separately with whatever result it has. So it creates a very difficult situation to try and try that case piecemeal. And I think Judge Rolfe, I think, understood that, the trial judge, because when he allowed us to dismiss, Kesterson 1, when we went up on appeal on the Wallop issue, he wrote in the order that it would promote judicial economy and avoid multiple trials by handling it that way. Now, the Western District declined to do it that way.
In effect, though, what you kind of want is an interlocutory appeal, and since we don't have a procedure for that, you gain that ability by dismissing your remaining claims. But, if this court I understand the balance you're saying, and in your case, why you think it would have been more efficient, but if the court wanted to allow interlocutory appeals of decisions on one claim, it does in certain narrow circumstances, and if it doesn't fit here, is it appropriate to let you get around those rules and then refile that later?
Well, I think what you're asking me is, why isn't it a splitting of cause of action? How do we get around what was ruled on by the trial court? Well, there's three reasons, and I think the most important reason is the most practical reason that was kind of glossed over in the Western District opinion that ruled in our favor, and that's this. State Farm has come to court and said, look, the plaintiffs never had a cause of action before. They filed this one against Wallet. They filed the UM claim on Wallet's conduct. They never had a cause of action. Despite that, that non-cause of action we're going to use as a sword to say you cannot now file what we all agree is a meritorious cause of action.
So if you'd won on that first appeal, then you wouldn't be making this claim because then it would be splitting it?
If I'd won on the Wallet.
Because you would have had a cause of action if they found you did have a cause of action, and so you'd won, then this would be splitting it? It depends on how successful you were, success in dismissing the first
appeal. Of course, if I win on the cause of action against Garrett Wallet, I mean, I proceed to trial on him. I probably wouldn't have the uninsured motorist claim. Well, it gets complicated because of the state level expense fund, but I don't think that creates a split of cause of action either. Obviously, the case would have gone to trial. We would have had some result, and all the issues would have been handled in one case, which is what everybody had desired to happen in the first place. But, again, I think the practical effect is they're saying, look, the non-cause of action is a bar to the meritorious cause of action. And the problem with that reasoning, and the legal reasons why I think we should win, is this. All the cases, and the case that this court decided over 40 years ago, Lee versus Gunther, you know, that you chase the genesis of the splitting of cause of action back to the res judicata rule, which this court said presupposes a claim and judgment of one plaintiff against one defendant. And yet that never occurred here. This case was never heard on its merits. As a matter of fact, that's why we're here. We just want one shot to hear some part of this case on its merits. Since it wasn't heard on its merits, it doesn't qualify for splitting a cause of action. That's one of the requirements that you have to establish a splitting of cause of action. So that's one reason. That's not the best reason, I don't think. I think the best reason is the reason set forth in McCrary versus Truman Center, which says that the rule against splitting a cause of action applies only if three requirements are completely fulfilled. One, that the parties are the same in both. Two, that the claims arise out of the same transaction or occurrence. And three, that the evidence for the claims is identical. Now, we've briefed this completely, but I think it's pretty clear that the evidence we have against the Phantom vehicle is miles and miles away from the evidence we have against Gary Wallet. The Phantom vehicle, we have to prove simply that there was some vehicle, unidentified, that caused the accident, that caused the injury, and that was negligent. It's a rear end doctrine.
What do you make of Rule 7401B? Which says that when more than one claim for relief is presented, the court may enter a judgment as to one or more but fewer than all of the claims only upon an express determination that there is no just reason for delay. Did the court make such a...
It did, Your Honor.
It did say that.
It did say that in Kesterson 1.
After
the court dismissed Wallet and State Farm initially, that order stated that.
And then the Court of Appeals...
So it was ripe for appeal at that point.
It was, and we did appeal.
And you did appeal. But then it came later that you had a second appeal.
Right.
And was there such a determination made there, or was that was when you dismissed
we didn't need it then because we had dismissed the Phantom vehicle.
Why didn't you get the same determination for the second one?
Well, it didn't work in the first one. The Western District declined to accept the trial court's designation of that. They said, well, despite what the trial court says, we're not going to rule on the Wallet UM claim first time around.
But is that because they found they were not sufficiently separate?
Well, State Farm thinks so, and State Farm is making an argument
Is there another reason they indicated or that would be valid under the rule?
Well, they just don't have to accept the trial court's determination. It's not a mandatory rule that if the trial court designates it this way that they have to hear the appeal. The Western District, on other occasions that we've researched, did the same thing. They decided which cases they were going to hear piecemeal, what we're going to call it that, and decided which ones they wouldn't. And they decided they wouldn't in this case. So we tried, and you know, the trial court, I think, was being very cooperative, said, look, I don't want to try two cases either, and did exactly as Judge Wolf asked. So you know, for whatever reason, the Western District declined to go that route. But getting back to what I was saying about the real difference and the real reason why this is not splitting a cause of action is that we have two different proofs in the Phantom case than we do in the Wallach case. The proofs in the Wallach case is that A, he was a driver, B, he was uninsured, and C, he was negligent. And the negligence allegations have to do with him going too fast in an icy condition. The Phantom vehicle allegations, on the other hand, don't have anything to do with insurance. We just have to prove that an unknown vehicle rear-ended these people and caused the accident. And you've got two entirely different groups of operative facts to prove those two claims. And I think, more than anything else, that's where the claim that we've split the cause of action fails.
Are both claims the Phantom vehicle and the other claim against State Farm?
Yeah, there's two State Farms, but yes, they are.
Okay.
They're collectively joined one.
If instead of being a Phantom vehicle, you knew who the other tortfeasor was, you could sue them separately. We don't require you to bring both suits together, right. And you could appeal them separately.
Exactly.
So is part of your argument that, therefore, the fact that they're not there and you're having to sue the uninsured motorist carrier, that it shouldn't make a difference and you shouldn't have to bring them together where you wouldn't otherwise?
That's exactly one of our arguments. And, of course, that's what the Western District agreed with, too. You know, what all the cases say is that the UM carrier steps into the shoes of the uninsured driver. In this case, State Farm's going to step into the shoes of the Phantom vehicle. As Your Honor stated, if we had found the Phantom driver and sued him individually, we could have either included him in this case or gone to a judgment and then sued him in another case. So State Farm stepping into his shoes or her shoes, whoever the Phantom vehicle was, is subject to the same rights and responsibilities. So they're claiming something extra that the Phantom vehicle himself wouldn't have, which is you've got to sue us all at once. And I think, you know, that reason, which is the one the Western District is, used, is just as persuasive as any. But I think there's, like I said, three strong reasons why we haven't split this cause of action. So we'd like the court to obviously adopt the Western District opinion again and send us back to the trial court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court. Mr. Padberg's made an argument about State Farm saying that they never had a cause of action. We never made that argument, and the Court of Appeals in Kansas City didn't rule that the first time. The issue was Mr. Wallet had immunity. It wasn't a jurisdictional issue. It wasn't a cause of action issue. It was an immunity issue. He had immunity, and as the court knows, immunity is a defense.
It was the workers found to be within the sole jurisdiction of workers' compensation.
No, right? The issue was it was immunity. He had immunity, which is a defense,
okay.
Which if he would not have pleaded it in the circuit court, case would have been on.
Okay.
So it was not a jurisdictional issue. It was a defense, which he raised, and that's what the Court of Appeals ruled on in the first appeal. What the Court of Appeals also ruled on in the first appeal was that the plaintiffs only had one cause of action for UM coverage. They only had one claim, one cause of action. And that's why the court did not address the partial summary judgment in favor of State Farm.
Could they have initially brought two different suits, one against the client that they took the first appeal as to Mr. Wallet, and one as to the Phantom driver as a separate suit initially and then proceeded with those separately?
If they would know who the Phantom driver was, yes, they could bring one suit against Mr. Wallet. They could bring a separate suit. And, you know, that argument has a little of an initial appeal until you look at the fact that that's true, they can do that, but you know what? They can only sue that guy one time, and they can only sue that guy one time. They can't sue him twice or three times. Same thing here. So, in other words, even though they can sue joint tortfeasors individually, you can't sue this tortfeasor and say you're negligent because you were driving too fast, get a bad result, and then come back and sue him again and say, okay, this time I'm going to say you should have swerved.
But couldn't they, if they knew who the other tortfeasor was, it wasn't a Phantom, have sued them both together and then voluntarily dismissed against one and brought a separate suit against them?
Assuming they were still in the voluntary dismissal where you didn't have to get trial court approval to do that.
So why, as a policy matter, should it be different where you're suing a Phantom driver? Is it because you're suing under the insurance policy?
Well, it's because you're suing the same defendant. As I understand the rule on splitting the cause of action, you only get one shot to sue one defendant one time for all the same injuries arising out of the same transaction or occurrence. And that's what we have here. In this case, they have one shot to sue State Farm for uninsured coverage, and they're required to bring all that. They can't sue Mr. Wallet or say he's uninsured, go try a case against him, get a bad result, and then come back and file a separate suit and say, now we're going to say it's the Phantom this time, and have a whole other lawsuit when the facts, the injuries are identical, it's the same insurance policies, it's the same coverage, and it's the same facts. It's just a different argument. That's the whole case. In this case, as I put in the brief, if you allowed to split it, two different lawsuits, here's what would happen. First case, we say, well, we got a better case against Mr. Wallen. Okay, he's the driver. He's going too fast on an icy road. Got a good case against him. We call him to testify. He testifies about the facts. Says, you know, I'm driving along, and I think I got tapped by a phantom vehicle. Well, then they call the truck driver and his wife, who are the witnesses in the case, who have testified, there was no phantom vehicle. Okay? There's the evidence. Jury makes a decision. If for some reason the jury decides, hey, there was a phantom vehicle, they get nothing, then they come back and file the second lawsuit. Now the argument is, okay, Mr. Wallet, we like you, you're a good guy, tell us about how you got hit by this terrible phantom vehicle. He does that, and then I call the truck driver and his wife, he said there was no phantom vehicle. Same evidence, same injuries, same trial. So now we're having two trials on the same thing. So that's where we're at. I never understood an argument that it would promote judicial economy by having two different trials. It was mentioned that Judge Rolfe did let them voluntarily dismiss the phantom vehicle claim after the first appeal. It's also noted, though, that we did object. State Farm objected to that for this very reason, that it shouldn't have been dismissed, but it was.
Does anything in the Western District's first opinion indicate why they did not accept the certification?
Yes. The court said in the very first appeal that these claims, the phantom vehicle part of it, the Mr. Wallet part of it, were all part of one claim, one judicial unit, and you can't piecemeal the appeal. And
that's why the counsel doesn't interpret the opinion the same way. Is there something ambiguous in your mind about it?
I don't think so. I think, Judge, it says what it says, and because the procedural background at that point was we were granted summary judgment in favor of the claim about Mr. Wallet being uninsured, and that's what went up on the first appeal. And the court said, well, and they ruled the issue about Mr. Wallet, said he's got immunity, he's out. We're not going to address this partial summary judgment in favor of State Farm because the phantom part of the claim is still down in the trial court. It's unresolved. You haven't resolved one complete claim here, so we don't have appellate jurisdiction. And there have been several cases on this. The one that the circuit court relied on was the Shelter Mutual versus Volgamott case, where Shelter had filed a declaratory judgment action. They got a favorable ruling as to part of that, and they wanted to go ahead and take that up and get an appellate ruling, so they dismissed the other claims that they had. The court says, you can't do that. You know, we're not going to let you dick around with the rules of procedure and get an interlocutory or an immediate appeal when you can't get it. We don't allow that. My old boss, Judge Blackmar from this court, in the Felling versus Giles case, said the same thing, that you can't maneuver around the rules of civil procedure by dismissing here and there to try to get appellate jurisdiction. We don't allow that. Another case that's in the insurance context that seems to be on point is the Columbia Mutual versus Epstein case, which again talks about how these are claims, how claims need to be broadly construed to bring them in one action. In that case, Columbia Mutual filed a declaratory judgment action. The insured counterclaimed for vexatious refusal and bad faith. The circuit court ruled the declaratory judgment action in favor of the insured, and then that went up on appeal. And again, the appellate court, I believe the Eastern District, said, well, you can't do that because the counterclaim remains pending for bad faith and vexatious refusal to pay. That hasn't been resolved. It's the same operative facts as the declaratory judgment action. The appeal comes back. I think out of all the cases probably that I cited to the court in the brief, the one that I think perhaps makes the most sense in the bottom line issue is the Creel versus Union Electric case. In that one, I think that's the Western District again who refused appellate jurisdiction. That was a case where the plaintiff claimed to have property damaged by Union Electric. The plaintiff pleaded two different theories, same damages, same operative facts, but had a theory of strict liability and a theory of negligence. The court dismissed the strict liability case. Case went up on appeal. And once again, the court sent it back down and said, look, you know, you got two different theories for the same damages. You can only recover the damages once. You haven't resolved that one entire claim, even though you have different theories, and maybe it takes a little bit different evidence or a little different argument between the two theories, you only got one claim. And so it came back down. So those are those cases. Also, kind of the interesting thing about the appellate history of this case is that when we did the first appeal, I think Judge Smith wrote the opinion for the court, the Western District, and said, as I noted, that there's only one claim here. Only one claim for UM coverage. And then when the case came back on this third appeal from where we arise, the court says, well, we were wrong, and there are really two different causes of action. And that's kind of where we landed up today. But Judge Smart wrote a dissenting opinion, which, again, I think supports our position in this case, and that deals with respondeat superior liability. As he pointed out, there's at least one case where if I'm of the plaintiff, and let's say I slip and fall in Walmart on some pickle juice, and I find out there were two employees carrying the pickles and they both dropped it at the same time and neither one of them cleaned it up, and I slip and fall and I'm injured, I can sue Walmart, but I can only sue them one time. I can't sue them. I could sue them for respondeat superior liability on employee A and go to judgment. And if I get a bad judgment, I can't come back and sue them again for employee B's conduct. And that's what we're talking about in this particular case. So I think finally, also mentioned at the end of the brief is the issue about whether, in fact, the law of the case doctrine applies here, since we did have in the first appeal in this case a finding by the Western District that there was only one cause of action for UM coverage, and that was the holding in the first case. And under the law of the case doctrine, that may very well decide the issue as well.
Thank you, counsel.
I guess the last point I'd like to address first, and that's the concept that this was the law of the case. First time around, the Western District said, we're not going to hear the UM claim on Wallop because we think it's all one claim, send it back, and we'll hear it again later. When we went back without the phantom vehicle claim attached, the Western District looked at that again and said, you know, we didn't really mean to say what it appears that we said. They clearly came out and said we made a mistake when we used those terms, one claim. And it is not the law of the case. And I think the Western District's own pronouncement of what they intended and what they said in their first opinion should be controlling. They weren't trying to establish that this was a splitting of a cause of action, and they never did intend to do that. State Farm says, well, you know, the plaintiff dismissed their case and now they're splitting their cause of action. They had a right to appeal the dismissal of our claim as well, and they chose not to do it. So the argument there is just a little bit disingenuous. One thing about what happened in Kesterson 1 again, and the court asked...
How could they appeal the voluntary dismissal of your claim?
The Valdemont case, which is one they rely on, the same thing happened in that case, and it was appealed. Now, it's a tricky appeal, I agree with you, but they can appeal it saying...
I thought you'd get... You'd volunteer.
Oh, sure, I can voluntarily dismiss. Yeah, but it was dismissed by the court. Because of... And so they have a right to try to appeal it. That's what happened in the Baltimore
unless it's
case.
Kind of a death knell kind of situation. I don't think you can appeal. You can't appeal a voluntary dismissal unless it's in effect with prejudice because of the nature of what you said.
I agree, but oddly enough, it happened in this other case they cited. I don't know. I like the court. I'm a little bit mystified about how that happened, but it did, mm-hmm. And that's how the Volgamont case got decided. what did happen, so the court knows, in the first case was asked about whether we were deemed to have a cause of action or not. The court said there was no subject matter jurisdiction on our case with Mr. Wallet. So, in fact, the court never had jurisdiction of the case. It didn't exist. And that's why I think it's more compelling to say, without a cause of action, without it being decided on its merits, that can't be used as a sword later to say, well, you split a cause of action that doesn't have merit later on. And I guess the final thing I'd like to say is this. State Farm says we split the cause of action because they're a single defendant. You can't sue a single defendant on more than one occasion. They cite no authority that controls, and obviously our state has no case precisely on point. We've cited foreign jurisdictions, all of which hold consistent with the position we're taking and consistent with what the Western District did below in this case. If there was any authority out there anywhere, I'm sure we would have seen it, that says you can't do what we did. But in fact, you can, because the rules for splitting a cause of action are strict, they're tight, we didn't violate them, and I think this cause of action should stand just as the Western District said it should. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.